I always just took a step back and said, like, am I happy with what I create? If I watch my video back, do I actually like what I'm watching? I think that's super important. When you're creating content, you should always take a step back and say, this live stream, this Instagram clip, this YouTube video, is this funny? Is this entertaining? Is this hitting the sort of messaging or the stylistic point of content that I wanted to do? I don't think enough people do that. I think people all the time will create content, throw it out there and be like, all right, cool, go watch it. It's me. But you have to understand, like, what makes your content worth watching? Time is the most valuable resource we have. If you spend it, you cannot get it back. So if someone wants to spend time on your content, you got to make sure it's worth their while.
Welcome to the Becoming a Streamer podcast by Pipeline, where we interview your favorite streamers and learn about their journey to where they are today. I'm your host and co-founder of Pipeline, Snoopy. Today, I'm joined by Doug GoodGameBro Vini. He's a content creator with over 600,000 followers across platforms. He creates 5 YouTube videos a week and streams 6 nights a week, whilst also working a full-time job 9-to-5 at Nestle, where he manages their influencer relationships. Oh, and don't forget, he also is a dad of 2 and has a wife. It's absolutely phenomenal the discipline that he has and his ability to stay on top of his workload. He's also raised an incredible amount of money for charity, such as St. Jude's, where he raised over $20,000. I really enjoyed getting to know Doug more, and I think you're going to love this episode. Please share it with a friend. Without further ado, let's dive into Doug's journey. Doug, it's so good to have you on the podcast. I can't remember the last time, or when I first met you, it must have been back in 2016, 2017. Do you remember an EA Game Changers a couple of years back?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, I think around that time. Yeah.
Yeah, that was when we were just first kicking things off at Facebook. I mean, before we even, I think we only had 480p video at that point when we first started talking. We're like trying to work on 720p at the time. Thankfully, we've came a long way since then. But I really appreciate you taking the time to sit down and talk about your journey as a streamer.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, anytime you guys want me on, I'm more than happy to help. I think what you guys are doing at Pipeline is incredible. And whenever I have people that hit me up about streaming, I'm like, how do I get started? What's some good resources? I'm like, I can't recommend Pipeline enough. Like, believe me, go check it out.
I appreciate that, man. Still a long way to go. We're working on a lot of things. But before we get too deep into your story about how you became a streamer, I'd love to give the audience and the listeners some context on where you're at right now in your streaming journey.
Yeah, so I'm a Facebook gaming content creator. I've been a partner there since the first 40. It's kind of the, I call it like the after Stone. You know, Stone's sort of like the grandfather, obviously, and then there's sort of the wave that came after him, and I was lucky to be one of those. But I've amassed over, I think, like 300K on Facebook gaming. I don't try to put too much stock into numbers, and YouTube is about 200K, I think. So it's been, you know, it's been great. I love it. It's been a great hobby of mine, and hope I can continue to do it for a long time.
Interesting you call it a hobby, yet you have 300K followers on Facebook and 200K on YouTube. I think it's really interesting. I can't wait to dive in a little more to that. How often are you making content each week right now?
If you ask my wife, a lot or too much. So I stream about every Tuesday through Saturday around 9:30 p.m. Eastern. I try to go live like once the kids are in bed. Like that's really what dictates my schedule. And then YouTube, which is completely separate from Facebook. Facebook, I do pretty much like shooters, battle royale. I switch it up, play some sports here and there. But YouTube is all sports, and that's all original content that doesn't have anything to do with my stream. That's about 5-7 videos per week. And then there's always sort of like an Instagram video or two that comes out, or a Twitter video, or, you know, I'm trying to dabble a little bit on TikTok as well. So quite a bit of content for sure.
Per week. No wonder your wife's like that, because there's more to that. Kids, a job, there's a lot to that. But going back to young Doug, I'd love just to wind the clock right back, just to try and understand how you got into content creation and what makes you so good at it. Where'd you grow up?
Yeah, so I grew up in a really small town. It's called Luray, Virginia. If you're ever in Virginia, it's 100% worth going into. It'll take you 5 minutes to drive through it. And, you know, we have a Walmart if you got to stop for something. But it's a town where you basically have to play sports or you get in trouble. And so I just wanted to play sports, so I didn't get in trouble. I had my parents yell at me.
What was your sport?
I was a basketball guy. It's if you spend, you know, more than 5 minutes in the stream, you'll probably hear me reference basketball at some point or another. But it's my absolute passion. I played other sports. I played baseball, played football until I had two concussions and I was like, I'm out of here, and tried track and got bored. But basketball was like by far my sport.
So was basketball always, was that your first love before gaming came into the picture?
I always sort of had like a natural bridge into gaming. I remember, you know, getting, whether it was the Sega or the PlayStation or the Super Nintendo. I didn't have an original Nintendo, but I had a Super Nintendo. I think is one of my like earliest consoles. I always wanted to play something with sports. I'm the youngest in my family. I have an older sister. I have an older half brother. And, you know, when you're the youngest, you're sort of like always going to be the competitive one. You want to prove that, you know, I can do what, you know, big sis and big brother can do. And so sports were like a natural way for that. My sister played softball. She was like a cheerleader. She was a 4.0 student. My older brother is just like, he was an incredible basketball player. He was always sort of like pushing me in that, whether it was like driveway dunk contests or, you know, video games, playing NCAA football or something. So there was sort of always a natural bridge for me there.
Was there an obsession that developed around one or the other, whether it was basketball or gaming, or was it, you know, you love both of them, you were a normal kid growing up in school?
I think the obsession sort of stemmed from competition, and I could easily showcase in sports that, like, to me, there was something cool about being able to talk about doing something and then go out there and do it, right? Like, in basketball, I got in trouble for this a lot, but telling someone, like, I'm going to go drive right on you, and I'm going to blow right by you and score, I'm going to hit this three-pointer in your face, and then doing it and knowing that no matter what they do, they have nothing they can do to stop you if you're on your game. The same thing sort of translates to video games, right? Like, dominating or having a really good game, it's sort of like this euphoric high for me where I'm like, this is amazing. Like, I never did, you know, like drugs, or I didn't really drink alcohol that much growing up. And so for me, sports and competition were like always sort of like that high that I sort of rode.
Where did sports take you? Because I'm guessing it's still a big part of your life now, but when you were in high school and went to college, were you playing competitive then?
Yeah, so I went to D3 University in Virginia. It's called Eastern Mennonite University, which I'm not Mennonite, but my mom actually is. And then I found out later that like her dad was like one of the first presidents of the school, but I had no idea. But I went there for basketball, and so I had a scholarship there. But when you go D3, basically there's very little monetary pieces that come from that. So basically, like, you get a scholarship, it confirms you're going to be on the team, you're on the roster. But there is nothing to sort of help you from a financial perspective. My background, we didn't really come from, you know, a lot. And so when your school was saying, okay, it's $30,000 a year for your tuition, even after grants and sort of minority scholarships and things that I got, it still was like a significant amount of money. And so after 1 year, I was kind of like, I'm not going to be able to really afford this long term. And so I ended up leaving after the first year and going the community college route. But sports essentially took me that route, and then I tried out for a semi-pro team when I would have been 21, made that, but they were paying like peanuts. Like, it's, you're playing in middle school gyms, you're traveling up to New York and then down to sort of Georgia, the accommodations aren't great. it was one of those points where I was like, do I want to chase basketball and the competition route there, or do I want to try to pivot and find something different that still scratches that itch for me, basically.
Were you at that point, was it like too late to really go into bat, like at 21, was it too late to, you know, make it in basketball, or was there still that chance it was just going to be a grind?
It was a weird thing. I talked to my wife, who was my girlfriend at the time, and, you know, she's, again, my wife is significantly smarter than me. She's a much better human being than me, and I'll talk about why she's important in my journey later, but my wife is very good about asking the right questions. And so one of the questions she asked me is like, okay, you made the team, but what are you going to do with that? And that's when I sort of sat down and was like, okay, even if I play out of my mind, like, there were guys that were talented on the team. There was a former Georgetown player. There was a guy who was Tyler Crawford. There was a WVU guy, his name, Kevin Pitsnoggle, I think. He's like a 7-footer. So there were like really talented guys in the team. But even if I played really well over the course of 2 years, the best thing I could have had is maybe go overseas in Europe to play sports. And for me, it's like, do I want to go play over there? And then now I have a girlfriend for a long time. Does she want to go over to Europe and watch me chase basketball dreams? It wasn't really the best situation for us at that point.
So sports wasn't going to cut it at that point. You made that realization. What was your next steps? Was it, I need to get a job?
Yeah, so I really had two dreams growing up. One was to go to the NBA, which at this point I had solidified wasn't going to happen as a 6'3", like, it was like 6'3", 175 at the time. Like, wasn't going to go to the NBA at that point. My other dream was to be on ESPN. I grew up idolizing Stuart Scott, Scott Van Pelt, Robert Flores, people that were sort of analysts and sportscasters that had these really funny personalities and could just sort of connect with people. And I sort of found myself in like this weird spot of like, I don't know, it's too late to do that. I've already tried to go after a different major in school. What do I do? And then my wife comes to me and says, hey, I want to go after my master's degree. And now I'm like, I'm gonna have all the time in the world. Like, I have so much free time. Like, what do I do with that? And for me, I had always had friends and people who had, you know, dove into streaming, and some have become, you know, very popular off of streaming. And I was like, I've created YouTube videos for a couple of years. Like, what if I tried streaming? And that was sort of the natural like push point for me to go down that route.
I'd love to double click on that YouTube. When did you start doing YouTube and why?
YouTube is interesting. To quickly cover, in high school, I started a website. You had to do a senior project in high school. And again, I'm from a very rural country area. So people are like, I'm going to fix a Model T up, or I'm going to build like this giant birdhouse or doghouse. And I'm like, I don't know how to do any of those things. I'm not handy. My grandmother, I'm incredibly close with her. And she suggested, like, why don't you make one of those websites you always go on? And I'm like, oh, that's a good idea. So I made a really bad website called whoisdougievini.com, which is my full name. And basically I realized after it started doing pretty well, it was kind of like my goal was to be IGN.com, like the next IGN. It started doing well. And then I realized you can't really market to companies. Like, whoisdougievini.com is like a great marketable website.
This is no average 16-year-old. no average 16-year-old makes a site called Who Is Them, and then tries to market it and it does pretty well. How are you doing well? What is going on?
So I used to post on IGN message boards like all the time. Like I had like 20 or 30,000 posts on there. Some of my like best online friends I had sort of formed from there that I played games with, whether it was 2K or NCAA or Gears of War. And so when I made the site, a lot of them were like, yo, this is really cool. Like, I'm down to check it out. And I made a message board, and I think in a week we had 1,000 members. And so when I presented it to the sort of the panel or the board my senior year in high school, I showed them the message board. I'm like, and it's been up for 7 days officially as of today. I have 1,000 members. And they're like, what? And I at that time, I didn't really understand like what getting 1,000 people to sign up for your forum in 7 days like meant. But it started to sort of turn the wheels like this could be like something I could do. I ended up changing the name from whoisdougievini.com to stickskills.com. So sort of like a playoff, like analog sticks and hockey sticks and like all that stuff. And the site did really well. Eventually, over the course of a couple of years, we had 400,000 unique visitors a month. We had, I think, 18 or 19 people on staff that were writing articles, that were doing news, that were doing previews.
That is incredible, though. Featured
it. Yeah, it was, again, I didn't understand what I was doing at the time. It was just like, oh, this is cool. Like, it's whatever. But I ultimately sold it because I was working full time, like 50, 55 hours a week running a retail store. And I was also trying to keep this website going. I was probably like 20, this is probably 2014, I think, when I sold it. But my wife came to me and she was like, you've lost weight. And I'm not like a big dude. I'm like a skinny dude anyway. She's like, you've lost weight. You're working too much. You need to like figure out like what you're doing. So I sold it, and then I changed my path because she was still doing her master's, and I sold it to make goodgamebro.com, which became a sports website. For about like the same thing of like news and previews. But my pitch was, it'll be funneled down. It's not covering everything. It's covering just sports. It's a smaller niche to cover. And I'll have, you know, more time in my hands, which worked. I had a really good group of people that worked with me on it. Life came in the way for a lot of them, whether it was kids or health or something. And they respectively had to sort of, you know, step away. And then that's when I was like, you know what? It's time to go heavy into like YouTube. And at this point, this is only a couple months for Good Game Bro at this point. So I went heavy into YouTube, and then streaming obviously came shortly after that.
And you became the personality on YouTube. Were you making content around you or content around the games?
Yeah, originally I didn't want to show my face because, I mean, it was funny you even mentioned when you first hopped on the call about my voice. Like, when people, if someone hears my voice, the image of the person they picture is completely different. And so I was always afraid of like, you know, when I hop on the mic and someone sees my face, you're like, bro, what? Your voice doesn't even like match your face. Like the first thing my wife ever said to me when I met her, my wife was a college volleyball player at the school we went to. The first night we met was at an ice cream social, And I walk up to her and I was like, hey, how are you? And she's like, your voice doesn't match you. That's literally the first thing she ever said. And so I've always been like conscious of that. It doesn't bother me, but it was just like, I was always like, oh God, the internet's crazy. Like, I don't know if I want to put my face out there. So I was the personality, but I didn't show my face for until I hit like 10 or 20K subs, I think.
Wow. So, I mean, 10 to 20K subs is also quite a lot. I mean, you know how hard it is to get going these days. When you were getting that first, you know, 1,000 or 10,000, was that bootstrapped off of your previous success with GoodGamer.com, or was it net new?
There were probably 1,500, 2,500 people that had sort of like migrated over, because we had a solid Twitter presence. And, you know, I knew what I was sort of doing from like social media marketing perspective. So I think like that helped. But a lot of it was just sort of like capitalizing on, okay, Madden is going to come out and people are going to be looking for tips and tricks or best ways to do X or Y. I call it like the sandwich method. I'm going to build basically the meat of my content that I want to create, but I'm going to put like really nice lettuce and really nice like mayonnaise or really nice like pickles or whatever that are going to also attract people to bring them in, that they're hopefully going to say, oh, you know what? The meat on that sandwich is actually really good too. I want to stay for that. And so I just sort of smartly created content around different times of the year to drive people in, to get them hooked on my other content, to keep them there long term.
And do you attribute, because this is, you're thinking a lot like very strategically about and tactically about your content. Do you think that's informed off your experience running the websites before? How did you learn 100%. That stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I'm the type of person that, like, I don't want to do anything halfway. If I do something, I want to be good at it. And to me, one of the most frustrating things in the world is to go out there, try to do something and do it really poorly. And so I always have like a natural fear, I think, of that. You always want to make mistakes. Mistakes are 100% important, but I literally hate failure. Like it's a sports thing, I'm sure, but like just from my childhood, but like I literally do not want to fail. And so I would do anything and everything to research, to find information, to figure out trends, whether it's search engine optimization or whatever, to figure out how I can best succeed in any way.
I really admire that. When you were thinking about going to streaming, what informed that? Why did you decide, okay, I'm on YouTube now, I'm going to start streaming?
One of my good online quote-unquote friends is Gold Glove, who's a very popular streamer on Twitch, and I had always watched him, and he was so funny, and he was just how he delivered his stuff, and I was like, man, like I could do that. And there were other guys too, like Onto the Boss on YouTube, who I just sort of talked to at the time, and people were like, yo, you should try streaming, like it's a good thing, like you'd be good at it. And I was terrible, like the first, I don't know, a year, I was god awful. But it was just fun to like try something new and then have that whole additional experience of like, okay, YouTube, I know how it works. I know how tags work. I know how titles work. I know how to attract people, how to create thumbnails, all these different things. When you go into streaming, it's a whole different ballgame. There's no editing. You have to, like, you're doing it live. You got to be on your A game from the onset. So it was something new for me to sort of discover, conquer, and then also learn completely all over, which I think was like part of the allure of it.
Why didn't you ever give up? In that first 10,000 to 20,000 YouTube subscribers, then going over the stream, like why did you never give up?
I think I don't really lose sight into like why I do something. To me, I will only do something if it's fun. If I'm not having fun, I'm not enjoying it, I try to take a step back and say, why aren't I having fun? Am I putting my sort of like mind in the wrong way? Meaning, am I trying to compare myself to someone else's results? I don't like to compare myself to anyone else from a performance standpoint. Like at the end of the day, you can control what you can control. And so from what you essentially do, you should be looking at like, am I creating the best version of my own content? I don't want to, you know, try to do Stone's content, right? Stone creates incredible content, but that's literally Stone's content. He is the best version of Stone Mountain. I don't want to try to emulate someone else. Like I want to create my own stuff. And so I always just took a step back and said like, am I happy with what I create? If I watch my video back, do I actually like what I'm watching? I think that's super important. When you're creating content, you should always take a step back and say, this live stream, this Instagram clip, this YouTube video, is this funny? Is this entertaining? Is this hitting the sort of messaging or the stylistic point of content that I wanted to do? I don't think enough people do that. I think people all the time will create content, throw it out there and be like, all right, cool, go watch it. It's me. But you have to understand like what makes your content worth watching. Time is the most valuable resource we have. If you spend it, you cannot get it back. So if someone wants to spend time on your content, You got to make sure it's worth their while.
That is such a good insight. A really, really good insight. You need to, and then just that iteration. I mean, you've been doing this for years and just getting a little bit better every time is incredibly powerful. When you started streaming, what was your viewership like in the beginning?
It was, I think we were like the 30 to 50 range. I tried everything though. Facebook Gaming wasn't around the time, but I was on Beam. Then it became obviously Mixer later on. I did YouTube before YouTube was like officially pushing gaming streaming. I obviously did Twitch as well, because Twitch has been the market leader for a very long time. My best stream ever though, in the early days, I had a YouTube stream. I think it was UFC 2 had just come out, or no, hadn't come out yet. I got early access from EA Sports, leveraging like my PR contacts from back in the website days. They gave me early access. They said I could stream, could do whatever. And I started streaming, and I wasn't even paying attention. I was doing like a female player career in UFC, and I look up and I have 700 viewers. And I was like, I'll never get nervous, but I was shaking. It's like, I don't know what I'm going to do with 700 people. Like, how am I this entertaining for 700 people to be here? And people are asking me questions and I'm like answering them. And I finished the stream. It's like a 7-hour stream. And I was like beyond exhausted. My throat is like sore from talking so much. And I like run in the next room and I wake up my wife. It's like 2 a.m. I was like, babe, or I guess she was my girlfriend at the time. And I was like, babe, I was like 700 people are watching me play UFC. She's like, I don't care. Go to sleep. I was like, okay. And the next morning she was happy for me, but it was just funny to like realize that I'm so excited about something like again to that degree. I hadn't felt that in like a long, long time, because it was something new and something I wasn't really anticipating having success in. And so when I found that, I was beyond floored, I think, at that point.
Do you have a rough sense of how many months you were at that 30 to 50 viewer mark?
It would have probably been probably the first half of that year that I was streaming. There would be times where it would go up. But if I talk about like sustained viewership, like what I was getting and I knew I could guarantee, that was like a 5 to 6 month range, I'd say.
When you emphasized your wife earlier on, and I want to come back to it because I think you're such a family man, and it's evident, you know, even just in the last 15, 20 minutes of you speaking. How long have you been your wife? Or has she been with you since high school?
So we met freshman year, first day of college. Athletes basically went on campus early. So basketball, we went early, and volleyball, same time of year. So we weren't at the same time. So I met her, we were 18 years old. We drove the same car in college. We didn't date until we were 22. Yeah, we were 20. I think how old I was for a second. We've been together 10 years now, but we started dating. We were 22. And again, like that's my best friend. That's, you know, the person I lean on, the person I count on, the person I like. I don't vent a lot, but when I do vent, you know, she's there for it. So she's incredibly important.
Yeah, this was going to come to just from a support perspective. I think a lot of people can struggle with support from friends or family. And when you do get that support, it can be really incredibly helpful. And what was your relationship around content creation as it relates to your wife or your family?
Yeah, in the early days, I think it was tough because I think I, you know, to be fully transparent, like I was being selfish. I think I was looking at it from the lens of, you know, this is what I want to do. This is what I need to do. Here's why it's important. It could, you know, lead to X, Y, and Z roads and the future for us. And what I wasn't doing essentially, because for a while it was just her doing her master's degree and then me doing essentially the content creation thing. And it worked because she was spending all of her spare time in the office right next to me in our house. And then I was spending all my time, you know, creating content. It was, you know, from that sense, like perfect. But when she finished her master's degree, you know, then she has this window of time open back up where it should be back to us spending time together. And I was arguably selfish at that point, trying to say like, oh, no, I'm creating content. Don't you see how important this is? Again, I was young. I was dumb. What I didn't understand is that when you're creating content and you're doing something that you're going to invest your time in, you have to take time to understand how your significant other is going to feel, how it impacts your spouse, how it impacts your kids, how it impacts your animals, your family, whoever. And you need to understand that it has to be sort of there needs to be some give and take there. You have to essentially understand what your partner needs or what your family needs, and they need to understand what you need, and you have to find a happy medium. Maybe it works for you, maybe it doesn't, but again, like creating content and being successful in it and losing your family is not a good solution for anybody. So always remember, you have to sort of keep that balance where they're happy and you can find your level of happiness and still get what you want accomplished done.
That's so important. You got to bring others with you, especially if you're looking at doing this over a period of time, which is years. It's really important that they're on that journey with you. When you were going through that journey and you're starting to get some success on the viewership side on Twitch, you were still working full time at this point.
Yeah, I was, what would I have been doing? 22. I think I was working for, I was running a retail store for a while. And then shortly after I started working, I think for Rosetta Stone. So yeah, I was doing full time throughout the entirety of that.
So that's something that really fascinates me is your ability to juggle so much. I don't know when did kids come into the picture?
So my daughter will be 3 in January. So 2018 is when we had her.
Okay, but even just having your wife before that, before your daughter, and juggling a full-time job, I think a lot of listeners that are hearing this, because they're working 9 to 5, and then they're trying to fit streaming in the evening, and they might or might not have an SO. How did you keep it all up? Did you sleep?
I mean, it's tough. I think sleep is something that I definitely sacrificed for a while until I realized, like, it's not good. Like, I don't want to, you know, die young. I would like to, you know, be around for a long time so I can watch my kids get older and then beat them in basketball when they get a little bit older, you know. So I think, you know, for me, again, this is why I point back to my wife. Like, I can, you know, you talked about sort of the obsessive sort of like thought around like competition and just being fully engrossed in something earlier. My wife is definitely my sort of like North Star there, where she'll say, hey, you're teetering a little bit too much. Like, you need to take a step back. You need a day off. You need to do something that's like outside of this. Like, I get that you're having success, but like, give yourself a break. Give yourself a reward for all that you are essentially trying to do. And for the longest time, it was her sort of stepping in and telling me that. And then as I've gotten older, I've been able to say, you know what? I need a day off, or I'm going to take a day off, and it's sort of like disconnect a little bit. But it is very difficult. I think for me, I had to set sort of like a rigid structure to say, okay, here's what my day is essentially going to look like. Like, once I got to a 9 to 5 schedule, it was, okay, my 9 to 5 is what I'm going to do. I'm going to hang out with my wife. We're going to make dinner so we can make sure we spend tons of time together. We're going to watch, you know, TV or Netflix or Hulu or whatever. And then essentially when my wife has always been a person that goes to bed around like, you know, 9 o'clock-ish. She's always had like very early hours for her job, or she gets up just a lot earlier than I do. And that's worked really well. So my entirety of my schedule is built around my family. Back to when my wife would go to bed, now to when my kids go to bed. I don't stream until my family's essentially asleep or in bed. Because I had to be conscious of, especially when we had kids, that puts a burden on my significant other. Because she essentially is taking on a burden, not a burden, but she's taking on the extra work of maybe if the kids get up in the middle while I'm streaming, that she's the one that has to go do that. And so you always have to be conscious of how not only it impacts you from a physical and a mental standpoint, but how it impacts your family, your significant others, like the people around you from the same lens.
Yeah. When you were mentioning working this 9 to 5, you know, fast forward a little bit, when did you become a Facebook partner, and when did that decision come into fruition for you?
The Facebook thing came the same time as my daughter. Oddly enough, I had a call from, I think, John and Josh at Facebook in like a November, December timeframe of 2017. And I still like couldn't believe it. I was like, this is so weird. Facebook doing gaming. And then when I sort of like agreed to, you know, be a part of the program, I went out to LA. I went out to LA 3 weeks after my daughter was born. I paid for my mom to fly from Virginia to Ohio to come stay with my wife, because we had just had our daughter. And I was beyond afraid to like leave my family at that time. But my wife is like, this is important. You should do it. It makes sense. Like, you put so much time into this, like, take the risk, like, do it. And that obviously is like a heck of a feeling too, when your support system,
to have that endorsement, I have goosebumps. That's like that endorsement, that just that belief in you.
Yeah. She, you know, my wife will clown me 24/7, but you know, when she, you know, is serious for a moment and says that, like, it definitely meant a lot.
That's perfect. So you go out there, you land this partnership. You were on Twitch at the time?
I was, correct. Yep.
And making that decision, was it something that came easily, or was it a big decision?
Yeah, I mean, it was a massive decision. I think for me, you know, I had a fairly established audience for like a creator of my size, and I was super happy about that. And I had been doing some on Twitch. I had been doing YouTube and Twitch, and then I had just started moving over to Twitch in the past year of like putting more time and effort there, but didn't really have a schedule. And now I'm saying, okay, I have to give my audience a heads up that I'm going to move to Facebook. And at that time, like when you told someone you're going to live stream games on Facebook, no one had a reaction that was positive. Like very few people that were from an audience perspective would say like, okay, that's great. Even the ones that diehard loved you would still question, because Facebook was not known at the time for having gaming. Like Stone was really one of, if not the only person really that had success there. And so it was a heck of a gamble. Like it was scary. But how I sort of viewed it was, when will I ever have the opportunity to go to a platform that is as large and established as Facebook, that is launching a new venture, that is bringing over not just myself, but people that are extremely established, and they're saying yes to do this as well. Why would I not take the risk? If I spend a year, 2 years, 3 years on it, and it doesn't work, like so be it. But I would be dumb not to try to be one of the early creators that does well on this platform. It can become part of the lifeblood of it.
Well, it sounds like that's went really well over the last few years. When you make that transition, one thing that you've not done yet is you've not quit your 9-to-5 job. Did you ever take a break from your 9-to-5 job at any point?
Other than paternity leave, like not really. I've taken a few like vacations for like, you know, gaming events. If you have to travel to LA for like a capture event or a studio invites you out to do something, like I'll take PTO. But really, no, I've always kept a 9-to-5 since I could work. I've worked since I was 17, or I guess 14 technically, but worked two jobs since I was 17 technically.
I mean, I would say maybe three jobs, because you know, you've got your live stream, you've got your offline content, you've also got to be a dad, got to be a husband, you've got to be working 9-to-5. How do you keep it up? Why would you not step away from that 9-to-5 job?
To me, there's a level of, you know, security too at the end of the day. The beauty of my 9-to-5 is that I can sort of do that. I know what I'm going to essentially receive from a compensation standpoint, because you know it's a salary based job, and that's great. Content creation, there's a lot more that sort of ebbs and flows with that. There is a level of, you know, being scared. I am at a point that I think 2018, I don't know, I'm losing track of years, 2018, 2019, somewhere around there, I could have went full-time from content creation across the board and been fine. My wife and I would have been in a good spot. We wouldn't have had to really, you know, worry too much. We'd have been in a spot that I never would have thought we would have essentially been. But a big thing for me is that at the end of the day, I really love, I alluded to in the very beginning of, I view content creation as a hobby. When I, you know, have a hard day at work, or the kids are crazy, I have a hard day with the kids or whatever, I can always go to streaming. I can always go to content creation. I can sort of like, you know, take a step back and just have fun and create this sort of content. And there's no pressure. If it does well, great. If it doesn't do well, so be it. Like, it is what it is. That to me is one of the coolest things, is that there is no essential pressure from content creation for me. Do I obviously want to strive to do the best and beat numbers that I've done before and be the best version of myself? Absolutely. But there is no real intense pressure on me from that lens. And to be honest, that's kind of a nice feeling.
I can imagine that, but it's also, it seems kind of contrasting with the competitor within, in that you have this innate competitiveness within you, that it would seem that you would make that jump. But I mean, I admire that you're able to keep all this up, and I totally get the stability. I think it's one thing that some content creators overlook too early, is how unstable content creation can be. But I feel you've had enough data over the last almost decade now to decide whether or not this is something you want to go to full time, and you've made that conscious choice that I'm not going to go full time.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, part of it too is that when you, speaking from the competitive lens, something I heard for the longest time was like, oh, when are you going to do full time? Because you can't, there's no way you can be a full time streamer or make full time content and also work a full time job. And when I had kids, there's no way that you could have kids or have a child and do full-time creation and have a full-time job. When I had two kids, they're like, there's no way you could have two kids and do all that at the same time. And for me, like, I love proving people wrong. There is nothing better than the look on people's faces that when they tell me something and they're like, you can't do that, or they doubt me or put me in a box or whatever, and then I can go do something, excel at it, and then I never say anything back, but I just like to know that, like, I won that, like, little mental battle, or, like, I proved someone wrong, like, someone put me in a box, and, like, I showed them that I can do more than they, you know, positioned me as being able to do. Not saying that's, like, the route that everyone should obviously take on that, but I think a lot of times, like, we can do more than what we necessarily think we do. I think a lot of it can come down to structure and having a really good schedule, having a great support system. Maybe not everyone's fortunate to have that. I totally understand that too. But there are a lot of times where, you know, we have more free time than we think. And if we're creative with how we essentially set up our schedule, there's a lot of flexibility and things you can do out of that.
How are you so disciplined?
I mean, my wife would probably tell you I'm not. Because my wife will see me go to bed at like 3 a.m. and then look at my phone for 30 minutes. And she's like, that's 30 minutes you could have been sleeping. I'm like, yeah, I know. I think it just comes down to the competitiveness. Like, I'm not like a structured person from, like, I don't have calendars. I don't put a lot of things into calendars. I don't take a lot of, like, handwritten notes or anything. But I try to, like, put as much as I can into my head. And I have sort of, like, I guess a notepad or a calendar in my head where I'm constantly thinking through and trying to remember things. And I do lean on other people, right? Like, I'll lean on my wife to, like, help with some of the family schedule stuff. She puts together an incredible calendar in our hallway that has, like, you know, appointment dates. If I set up something, I'm always like, hey, babe, can you remind me that we have blah, blah, blah. She's like, I'll put it on the calendar. I'm like, thank you. Mm-hmm. So, like, I'd be, you know, crazy if I didn't mention it. Like, you have to lean on people, I think, somewhat there. But I think it's about knowing your strengths too. Like, I know what I'm really, really good at, and I know what I'm really, really trash at. And so the things that I'm trash at, I work with my wife to say, can you help me here? And I'll pick up more on this end. But I just need, you know, I know if I want to hold myself accountable, I have to know that I'm not going to be great in some areas too.
Yeah. What are some of the systems that you built? Because I say, you know, you say you're not disciplined, but there has to be some system that allows you to go live that many times a week and create that many YouTube videos a week. What systems have you created?
Yeah, I'm a big Google Docs guy. So I have Google Doc after Google Doc after Google Doc, where, like, I've built like, sort of mission statements for, like, a year of, like, okay, my objective for this year is X or is Y. And then here's how I'm going to essentially do that. I forget the name of the, is it the five whys? My coworker Bree taught me this a couple of years ago, but it was about sort of like,
who, what, where, when, down. Why?
It's something like, I can't remember.
But
you identify a problem, and then you say, okay, why is that happening? And then once you break down, okay, why is that happening? Then you go down like a step from there and a step from there. You go down five steps. I can't remember the exact, like, name.
If anyone who's listening knows who it is, please please leave in the comments what the five watts.
Yeah. So I use a system similar to that when I, like, break down a lot of the things that I go through. I also have a system that I recommend to a lot. I talk about it on my stream a lot, from, like, a mental sort of, like, keep yourself sane standpoint. I have a system I read about when I was in high school dealing with sort of the passing of, you know, one of my best friends. And I just sort of didn't know how to, you know, deal with grief and deal with frustration and deal with bad days. And this is, like, super core to me. But whenever you have a bad day, I used to write it down essentially at that point. And I would write down, okay, I had a bad day. Here's the date. Here's what happened. Here's why I feel this way. And then you take a week from there and you go back and you read it. And then you'd read it sometimes and you'd be like, man, that's not really a bad day. Or, you know what? That was a really bad day. And I sort of allotted myself five, or it was more than five. It was like 15 bad days a year. And then I changed that to 10 bad days a year and then to 5 bad days a year. And it was really eye-opening to me to sort of go back and look at something and see the trivial things that I would allow myself to get caught up on and say, oh man, I had a bad day because like a YouTube video got half the views I was expecting it to, and I worked like 2 hours on it. Like, how could that happen? And I'm like, yeah, like, that's the ultimate, like, first world problem. That's not that big of a deal in the grand scheme of things. And it really helped me sort of mentally put myself in a spot where I was, like, understanding what really was worth having a bad day over. And you have to have bad days so that you understand what a good day is at the same time, versus what wasn't a bad day, and to get myself out of my own funk and really be able to like push forward. And so I attribute that system specifically to helping me out more than probably anything.
Yeah, it's a big part of the battle is the mental fortitude, because it really is a journey, and you have to have that mental fortitude to keep it up. When you reflect back on the last decade, what is one thing you wished earlier, you wished you knew earlier as a content creator?
I wish I didn't care as much about what people thought. I think when you're creating content so much early on, you're asking questions, and I think it's important, again, not saying you should not get feedback. Feedback is important. You should always ask people, what do you think of this if you have time to watch it? Or what can I be doing better? Give me some constructive criticism. Like, be a creature that sort of like craves that, but also understanding when people are giving you sort of overtly negative or malicious or hard feedback, that hurt people always hurt people. And so understanding what's the difference of someone who maybe dislikes your content and they can objectively tell you why, versus someone that just tells you that you're trash and you're no good, or you should give it up or whatever. Because when you're creating content, you sort of have, a lot of people are going to have a fragile sort of like ego at that point. And when someone criticizes you, you take it hard. Like, it's really difficult when you're in those early days to have someone tell you suck and not take it like personal. You build a tolerance up over time, but I wish I had just known more about what to take to heart and what not to take to heart back in those early days.
Well, Doug, I really appreciate getting to know your story a little more. What's next for you? What are you looking forward to in the future?
Yeah, I have a lot of cool plans. Some things that I can't talk about just yet, but I am working on some things that will, I think, set me up down the path that I ultimately want to go. You know, I'm trying to move a little bit more into sort of, you know, voiceover work. I'm trying to move more into, I want to voice. I have like a thing that I will say is that over the next 3 years, I want to do voice acting to some degree for like a cartoon character or a series or something of that nature.
I'm a big fan of this move.
Yeah, I want to move and dabble in that route a little bit, because like at the end of the day, like I always want to create, one of my things that I pivoted on is that the content I create, I want my kids to be proud of it when they get older, and not, you know, they're going to roast me a little bit, but I want my kids to be mostly proud of what I do. I want my niece and nephew to feel the same way. I want my family to feel that way, obviously, as well. And nothing would be cooler to me than to be able to do a voiceover for a cartoon or something of that nature that's animated, and then my kids can watch it and see if they actually enjoy it. That to me is like one of those goals that I definitely want to push forward.
Sweet. Well, where can everyone find you after this podcast and they want to go find you on socials? Where's the best way to find you?
Yeah, I'm on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, maybe a little bit TikTok. Just look up Good Game Bro. I'm the funny looking guy with the glasses and the little mustache and facial hair. And I'm pretty much on all those platforms every day.
Cool. Cheers, Doug. I appreciate the time.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.